Intervju Radija Študent.
Erik Friedlander. Erik Friedlander je čelist, ki že dobri dve desetletji inovira svojo rabo violončela. Ustvarja na širnem polju med vplivi amerikane, bluza, klasike, džeza, svobodne improvizacije in hasidskih glasb. Po uvodnem koncertu domačega dvojca Najova boste Friedlanderju lahko prisluhnili nocoj v klubu Cankarjevega doma. V kvartetu Bonebridge bodo ob njej muzicirali še Trevor Dunn, Michael Serin in Doug Wemble.
Eric Sander, you said that the idiom of cello is bound only to classical music, and as such, it enables you to go almost anywhere, to take any direction you want, because it's not bound to any specific genre of the recent century.
Right. Well, I do feel that way. I mean, I feel like violin has a jazz hot and fusion kind of associating bluegrass, and cello is kind of on its own in the sense that it's not tethered to associations like particular jazz formations or bluegrass or anything. So it can really go anywhere it wants. And that's exciting for me and all the other cellists who are trying to do improvisation.
Mm-hmm. But recently, this area that you're taking your cello is mostly exclusively Americana. I mean, you've done Rock Eyes and Propane album and the American Power Project and Broken Arm Trios is also in the same vein, and now this Bonebridge project. So what has drawn you in this last 5, 6, 7 years to the sound, to explore it in such depth?
Right. I would disagree only in the sense that Broken Arm Trio was more of a jazz project. And yeah. that's be considered American, I guess, if you want. The reason is because I started to delve into, to research into my own past. And when I was a kid, when I was young, my father, who's a photographer, would take us across the country every summer and put us in a camper. We would camp out for 2 months every year. And this happened every year until I was 17. And so I started having these memories. I would start to compose music and I would have memories of these trips and they would start coming back to me. And the other thing was that my first instrument was guitar, and I've always had a love of guitar. And I decided to try to bring those guitar techniques to the cello, and doing that caused me to write a particular kind of music, which I think has an Americana kind of feel. And so that's where this all comes from.
And before that, you were sort of into more Hasidic sound, which is currently on bystand.
I never know where I'm gonna go, you know, and the important thing is just to follow your passion and to follow what interests me. So I try to follow what interests me, and I just did a record called Claws and Wings that has piano and electronics, and that's very different from it. It has no Americana at all in it, and no feel like that. And so, and I just finished a Oscar Pettiford project and a soundtrack project, and both of those projects have different feels to them. So I feel like it's important just to follow what gets you excited. So I'm not sure exactly where that may lead me.
But one must say that your sound is very accessible, even let's say when you're working with Ikue Mori, it's still got a very likable sound. And one could say that you're not making things as hard for the listener as some of your contemporaries.
Well, that's for other people to judge. I mean, I think for me, I'm in a phase now where I enjoy melody and I enjoy paring down a melody to the most simplest expression possible. I think, I don't know, I think I don't know what to say about that. I feel like I just do what I do, you know?
Could one say that there's a similarity between what you're doing currently and what, say, let's say, John Zorn is doing with his more Dreamer-esque sound that he's been working on much lately?
Well, as long as I've known John, he's had a very melodic side to him. I'm certainly influenced by John, but once again, I would say that other people will have to decide that. For me, I don't feel like I'm going into it trying, using what he does with Masada or some of his Exotica projects as a model. I feel like I'm going after something that I have in my own mind and heart, mostly. I think most of us who've worked with John are influenced by him, for sure.
You also have a shared affinity to film music, and you've done much work in movie scores and accompanying photographs. This has been a sort of lightning tool of your work.
Right. I feel like I have an affinity to visual imagery and music, and it just led me to it. I think it's my history with my father being a photographer and just seeing photographs for so many years and understanding a little bit about photography. And so I love to do soundtracks. I don't do as many as I would like, anybody out there want to have a film, call me.
Yeah, I just actually wanted to ask you if you ever had a wish for someone like Wim Wenders to call you.
Of course, who wouldn't have a wish?
And when did you, let's say, gotten to know the work of Reisiger has done for Herzog? Has this been an inspiration for you?
You know, I'm not. I know that he's done work with him, and I know Ernst, and I think he's just the most amazingly talented cello player around. He's fantastic, and he's a great composer. So, but I haven't actually heard any of his soundtracks. So, I'm sure they're beautiful, though.
They're worth seeing. In the hall.
Yeah. I'm sure.
But Reisiger is your contemporary, more or less, and he's been also doing his very own thing in terms
Absolutely.
Of playing and in terms of utilizing the cello. But I read somewhere that when you were in the 70s and let's say in the 80s, that the cello was still considered a very classical instrument and that you had to develop your own techniques by yourself.
Well, I think all of us did. I mean, I think in this, Tom Cora was doing stuff in the 70s, Hank Roberts was doing stuff in the 70s. Ernst was probably doing stuff in the 70s, you know. I think for me it was just becoming aware of all these great players like Abdul Wadud and Ernst and Hank Roberts and people like that. And now there's so many more. I mean, there's so many cellists. And I think it's just a tribute to the versatility of the instrument. You know, it can be soulful, it can be aggressive, it can be rocking, it can be funky, it can do all those things, you know.
But let's say finger picking, like guitar playing with like a bass, are all these things have they become canon in the teaching process?
No.
Of the cello?
No, I still have people coming to me needing to learn those things, and but it's definitely more. I think, you know, when a cello player goes to look at the history of jazz and improvised music for models, there weren't so many when I was doing this in the 80s. But now there's so many more of us doing stuff, so that people have to see that they have to kind of bring some substantial pizzicato technique to the table and some bow technique. And, you know, I mean, Ernst was certainly a model for me, and his pizzicato technique is incredible. So.
And okay, maybe we should go back to Oscar Petford, because in a way he's also not only an inspiration, but also sort of a starting point from where you started your Broken Arm Trio, and also in a way the Bone Bridge Band, which you, with whom that you are playing tonight.
Right. Oscar Pettiford was a tremendous bass player, and he's known primarily as a bass player, but his secret passion was the cello. I mean, when he broke his arm playing softball with the Woody Herman Band, a friend gave him a cello to practice with because it was smaller and lighter, and he fell in love with it. He would string it like a bass, so he wasn't really a pure cello player, but the thing that's important about him was that he created bands that surrounded the cello as a leader. And for those of us in later on, looking back, he's one of the models who he wrote music for and created a band around the cello. And it did it at a high level, like really great music. You know, there's a lot of bass players who play the cello and they don't write great music like Oscar Pettiford did. Yeah.
After this, you modeled your Broken Arrow Trio, a fantastic band, which has till now only released one album,
right.
And then you actually sort of supplemented it with the Bonebridge Band. But
yeah.
How come you did not continue in that particular vein of music?
Once again, I felt like I had made a statement, and I went back to write more music for that group, and it wasn't coming. And so I decided to take a different turn. I decided to combine the element of Broken Arm with Block, Ice, and Propane. And so combine that. And what I needed, when I discovered the idea of having a slide guitar player, the music just wrote itself. So, and then I felt we had more to say in Bonebridge, so I wrote another record for that. So now we'll see what happens next. You know?
You mentioned an Oscar Pettiford project that you're currently on. That's not related to the Broken Arm or...
No, because Broken Arm was all my music. Yeah. It was all inspired by Oscar Pettiford with a modern take on it. This is all Oscar Pettiford's original music with my arrangements and inspired by some of the arrangements that people did for him. And it's Michael Blake plays a tenor in that, and Trevor and Michael play rhythm section again. And they're my go-to people. And that project will be coming out either next year or later this year.
And the Broken Arm and Bonebridge both have some semantic connection with bones. Is there any connection, or let me put differently, from where does the Bonebridge come?
Jesus, where does Bonebridge come from? I wanted something that was a little bit haunting and a little bit evocative of a country bridge in the south of America. And so I just made that up.
Well, the music you're playing with Bonebridge has a very nostalgic feel, one could say. So, and what was the response you've gotten from the listeners of this music?
It's very positive. I think people seem to be liking it, you know. It's been a lot of fun. We're on tour now for 2 weeks in Europe, and we've just gotten a great response. It's been a lot of fun doing it.
And what about this music? Sounds more or less quite composed. So how much of this music was actually written, and was it written only by you, or did you do it together with the guitarist?
Right. The music is all written by me, and then I arrange it. It's just one sheet of music, and then the idea is to create that structure, and then improvise in the structure. And then there's all sorts of arrangement tricks that you can do, where you know one person plays the melody, and then the other person plays the melody, and we play together, or we answer each other, or then the bass takes the melody. You know, where we have the bass arco plays the melody. You know, we do all sorts of different things, try to keep it interesting. But there's lots of room for improvisation. That's very important to me in this music.
You can also sort of improvise in terms of roles, as you can play both the guitarist. You can play both as a guitarist and as a bassist.
Yes. Roles. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. That's important. Is the roles where we support. I go from support to lead. He goes from support to lead. And if you see the band play live, it's much easier to see how the roles shift and move around the band. People step out into the spotlight, and others pull back. I try to keep it varied.
So it's somewhere I read a nice description that your music has a sort of living room feel, especially the one with the bone bridge. And does it? Do you have a feeling that some places resonate better with your music than others? For example, I've seen you play the Block Eyes in Nikasdorf, in this big hall, I mean the semi-big hall, and then once again in Maribor, in a small basement. And in the hall arrangement didn't work out at all for me. What's your view on that?
I don't remember. The first one was
in Saalfelden.
Saalfelden.
Yeah, 2011.
We did Broken Arm.
Yeah, but you also had the solo.
Oh, in the smaller hall.
Yeah.
Those were different concerts, though. Yeah. One concert was just a mix of solo pieces, mm-hmm. and the other was the Block Ice and Protein.
Yeah.
You know, there's a that's why live performance is so great, is that there's a mysterious alchemy of elements. There's the audience, there's the performer, there's the space, there's the presenter, there's the atmosphere that the people at the presenting venue give you when you arrive. I mean, it's all a mix. And when you're on tour and you're playing every night, you really need a response from the audience to. I mean, we're always going to be good. We're always going to be good. I can guarantee you that. But whether we're great or not, will be happen whether the audience really participates. It gets excited by what they hear.
Somewhere you said a rather abstract imperative for your music. But can you elaborate on how do you think your music is relevant to current time?
I think I said I want to be relevant. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be relevant to my time. I didn't want to be in an ivory tower writing music for nobody. So I feel like as long as I'm touring and people want to use me on their projects and I'm writing and I'm composing, then I'm relevant, you know, then I'm excited to be a part of my time, you know. That's something that's important to me.
And I was also wondering, besides all the cello players that have made a name for themselves, Hank Roberts to Rice Sager and a few others. I was wondering who are the young cello players that you really, in whom you really see a potential for making their own stamp on how cello is utilized and what sound does it, how to use it?
Well, let's see. I mean, there's Vincent Courtois, there's Christopher Hoffman in New York, there's Greg Heffernan. There's a bunch of players out there. You know, it's funny, as a cello player, I'm not so interested in listening to cello music so much. It's unusual maybe, but those are a few players, but I'm sure there are others that I missed.
And what about the scene in New York where you sort of developed your musical character? Since it's been dispersed throughout the wider region of the city, is it still as lively? Does it still offer the same potential for cooperation and learning that you had, let's say, in the 80s?
I think you're right. It's a little more dispersed, but it's still incredibly talented and deep. And the ability, there are still composers breaking new ground all the time and playing in clubs with new bands, and it's still very exciting. I mean, you know, I found Doug in a club playing and singing, and I heard his slide playing, and I said, "Oh, this is a guy for me." And there are still very active. I mean, it's tough. You know, the economy being so hurt all over the world has hurt us in New York as well. And it's tough for everybody, but there's still so many very talented, very extraordinary players playing in New York.
But you haven't yet managed to include Doug's singing in your project.
Well, I don't write lyrics, so if you come to the show tonight, you may hear him sing when he solos, which is kind of exciting. But right now I'm not interested in writing lyrics, so, and I don't think it's a talent. I've never done it before, so it would be foolish of me to try.
Okay, well, if you're done with this talk, I'm very thankful for your time and for your thoughts, and till this evening, have a nice time.
Okay, great, thank you.
V današnjem Eriš intervjuju smo poslušali pogovor z Erikom Friedlanderjem, ki ga je posnel Anže Zorman. Friedlander za zasedbo Bonebridge nocoj nastopil v klubu Cankarjevega doma, takoj za domačo zasedbo Najava.
Intervju Radija Študent.